Germany's far-right party, Alternative for Germany, or AfD, is actively building bridges with Washington. In the last couple of weeks and months, senior AfD figures, including the number two of the parliamentary group in Parliament here in Berlin, Beatrix von Storch, and the number one man for foreign affairs in Parliament, Markus Frohnmayr, have travelled to D.C. for meetings with officials from the State Department, the National Security Council, and Vice President J.D. Vance's office. And this isn't just a diplomatic courtesy. It is part of a broader strategy. The AfD is seeking legitimacy, influence, and ideological allies in the so-called MAGA movement. And the Trump camp has responded. In the lead-up to Germany's federal election earlier this year, Vice President J.D. Vance publicly called on the other political parties in Germany to seek closer cooperation with the AfD. And that was a highly unusual move, shall we say. And Elon Musk, a close Trump ally at the time, even live-streamed into the AfD Party Congress to voice his support for the party. So on today's Berlin Briefing, we'll talk about why you out there should be aware of this, where both sides see potential and where they clash. And joining me are two of my lovely colleagues at DW who bring sharp insights. Matthew Moore is a regular guest and you, of course, follow the AfD very closely. You've been on this podcast many times and we'll post a couple of the links where you've talked about other aspects when it comes to the AfD. So we've also got Ines Poul, our Washington correspondent, with the Insight Scoop on how these meetings were received in D.C. Really good to see you, Ines. And I'll start with you straight away. So can you briefly tell us, I've mentioned Beatrix von Storch. I've also said that Markus Frohnmayr was there and you interviewed him. We'll post the interview in the YouTube comments, of course, in the section. But can you tell us, what was the mood like? What was the reception? How were these meetings received in D.C.?
Yeah, so members of the AfD are here in the Trump world ever since Trump was inaugurated in January. We saw actually Beatrix Storch on inauguration day just passing us by. She has been here just some weeks ago in the White House, meeting with White House officials. You just mentioned Markus Frohnmayr. He is here and others were meeting in New York. So that they really do have a busy travel schedule, meeting Trump officials and, of course, a broader spectrum of members of the Republican Party. Markus Frohnmayr, for example, met with students who are members of the Republican Party here in Washington at Georgetown University for a talk. So indeed, there's a very intense exchange between, I shall say, Trump's America and the AfD.
And Matt, I mean, people listening to this podcast, they will have heard of the AfD, but can you just remind us, this is a fairly young party, and how has their position towards the US and in terms of foreign politics, how has that evolved over the years?
Yeah, I mean, it began as a party that was very anti-euro in the euro crisis. Then when there was the flood of, or lots of millions, if you like, immigrants came to Germany and came to Europe in 2015, it very much shifted the focus onto migration. And really, it's kind of been focusing on that issue as one of its core issues since then. But it's interesting because it didn't really deal and wrestle with foreign politics. It's still not something, an area that it's comfortable in as a party. It has really strong ties. It's very strong in the former East. And there's a kind of deep-rooted affinity to Russia, and they believe in close ties to Russia. And I think that has shaped its foreign policy perspectives as a party. But I think that we're now at an inflection point for the AfD where we're really seeing, through things like these visits, a real shift in the party.
And Ines, what do you make out? I mean, they met with really high-ranking politicians in DC. What do you see? How do they explain their interest in the AfD? And what do you see is their interest?
It is a little bit tricky, this new friendliness with the United States, because traditionally, historically, the AfD or members of the AfD pretty critical with the United States because of their world power. Also because, of course, the United States, have been critical with Russia, and also because the United States is a country of migration. And as Matthew, or immigration, I shall say, as Matthew just mentioned, you know, there was a lot of criticism criticism in the AfD regarding exactly that, that this country, the United States, is just a mix of people from all around the world. But of course, with Donald Trump in the White House, they see or they have an ally in fighting kind of for much more, I can say, brutal immigration laws. So that is really a major shift in the kind of approach from the AfD towards the United States.
Yeah, you asked Markus Frohnmayr about that. Maybe let's just hear it from him.
All of these attacks from the so-called mainstream media and the far left, the Democrats, and so on. And I mean, they want to ban him from the elections. And he went through all of this, and he was quite successful. He's now the president, and I think this is an inspiring thing also for us in Germany, because they're not on any longer ready to, to compete with the AfD on a normal political level, in a way that we try to discuss, that we're open for debate, that we try to offer better arguments. What they try in Germany at the moment, in my point of view, they think it's more easy to ban the AfD from elections, probably to forbid the AfD, but in the end of the day, they will be not successful with this, because you cannot forbid the opinion of millions of people.
So, Matt, I think we have to talk about the discussion around that, those ideas to launch that process of banning the AfD. Wherever you go abroad, this is one of the first questions that we get. If once people identify us as German journalists, they say, you've got a right-wing party in your country, and I hear that it might be banned. So if you could just fill us in where we're at there.
Yeah, well, what was interesting about Markus Frohnmayr, what he said, is I think it touches on a number of aspects of why Trump is so appealing to the AfD in a way that another US president simply wouldn't be, is that I think in Trump they see someone who is like a poster boy, a role model for an example, a kind of a blueprint for really someone who has kind of fought against the establishment, does things his own ways, somehow has a Teflon coat. It doesn't really matter what scandals that are dug up about Trump. He keeps powering through and has managed to basically conquer the Republican Party and take it over. And I think they see that. They see the way that he kind of has cracked down, if you like, on big media companies and basically put pressure on them to get them to either change their reporting or adjust their reporting. I think also they see the fact that he has overcome a number of attempts, whether it's these impeachment trials. I think that's what Markus Frohnmayr was responding to there. All of that for them is exactly what they want to be able to do, because they see themselves here in Germany as persecuted. Now you mentioned this ban process, and that's obviously something that is talked about here, because obviously under the German constitution, the people, the fathers and the mothers of the constitution, they wrote in this law that allowed the party, a political party, when it was shown to be in breach of the fundamental principles of the basic law, the constitution here, that you could ban it. It's not easy. And it's not something you can snap your fingers and it happens, but it's a process, and it's there to stop a party that's anti-democratic overtaking democracy. People here in this country, in Germany, think that it applies to the AfD. It's obviously the subject of
not everybody,
March.
But
some people do. But it's the subject of, discussion, and there's discussion on whether it does apply, and then there's a discussion on even if it does apply, should we do it politically? It would come down to the law, but he's basically, what you've heard there is him saying, that's happening to us, we're being persecuted, and therefore we can learn, we can share with the Trump movement, we can share our perspectives, and we can learn from them. They could be a role model for us. And I think that's super interesting. I mean, there's other reasons why I think they were there, but that's definitely one of them.
And we do have to add to that whole party ban discussion that, of course, it goes back to the experience of Germany, essentially, where Adolf Hitler's party rose to power with democratic means. And so in order to stop that from happening ever again, that is what's now in our basic law, because of the experience that, anti-democratic parties rise to power with democratic means in order to then undermine democracy once they're in power. And that's exactly what happened when Adolf Hitler was in power. So, but of course, the big debate is, just how far do you go especially with a party like the AfD, where you've already touched on it, some polls see them at some 39% for the upcoming elections, regional elections next year.
And that's part of the reason why, you know, if you listen closely to the AfD, they say there's a number of things that we have to do if we want to avoid being banned. Firstly, they think that the fact that they are the by far and away the strongest party in the former east of Germany, that protects them because it's because of the democratic legitimacy argument. The second thing they say is that the legal argument that we can do things to change, you know, that the accusations against us are things that we can adjust. We can change how we talk about immigration. We can change how we talk about Germans who are Muslim. The third thing they see as their kind of life ring is the Trump administration and people within the Trump administration, like they did in May when they were classified as right-wing extremists, calling it out and saying that there is something undemocratic happening here. And I think that's why they are quite happy to be having meetings at the State Department with influential people, telling their story, reminding them that what's happening in Germany. We may not be in the midst of an election. There's always a lot more interest in Germany around election times, and I think that explained why JD Vance got involved. That explained obviously Musk's intervention, but I think for them it's really important that you keep stressing that to having these connections in the offices, the corridors of power in Washington DC, so that should the efforts to kind of look at the surveillance, should that ramp up and should there be talk of a ban, that they would then get involved, because it does, whether we like it or not, realpolitik. If the US administration starts to criticise it, it puts a lot of pressure on the authorities here.
And you've just mentioned that assessment that they are categorised as officially right-wing extremist. I think we do have to also add for full context that some parts of them, some regional chapters, are officially categorised.
Yeah.
And the big as right-wing extremist. And so, you know, that gives our security agencies certain powers to keep a very close eye on them and potentially act if they are really found in breach of the German constitution. But the whole party itself, that is not a category that applies yet.
Well, in May, they said that they were a confirmed case, but they would pause it because the party challenged it, so they're going to pause that classification pending a court decision.
Okay. So, Ines, how is all of that going down in DC? How is the MAGA camp communicating that in their efforts to use it as a case of a lack of freedom of speech in Germany?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we heard that from JD Vance at the Munich Security Conference in the beginning of the year, right? How he was calling on freedom of speech in Germany. Trump does that regularly in the White House briefings, and others do that as well. They use actually Angela Merkel's and her way, how she approached kind of the war and the crisis in Syria. And when she let in many, many refugees in a fairly short amount of time, they're constantly talking about that, saying that this is when Germany really went downhill. Hill, and this must not happen again. And look, with the AfD, we have a party in Germany who is fighting exactly that, that too many, and I quote here, foreigners are coming into the country. And this is where the Trump administration and the leadership of the AfD really share the same language and the same political ideas. I just want to pick up on something Matthew said. I really think that the AfD has the feeling that the Trump administration could be kind of a life jacket in case this ban would take place, because I totally agree with Matt that, of course, Donald Trump would go really, really harsh on that, would really criticize Germany very, very harshly in case the AfD would be banned.
Ines, can I come in here, because that's what I wonder, because I think we know that Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and JD Vance, Vice President, have publicly come out and posted tweets that did that. But Trump himself, my perception here is that he's more restrained. Why is that? I mean, is that the case? Would you think he would come out and say that this is terrible and that they're cracking down on democracy in Germany? Or because I feel like he has a slightly different position. I don't know if I'm mistaken. What do you think about that?
No, he would come down on that because it feeds into his narrative. You know, the mainstream media are against us. The establishment is against us. He, of course, is a little bit more careful, but also he's not interested in details. You know, he lets his people talk about details, and he like loves to talk a lot about himself, as we know, and about kind of the bigger picture. But I'm pretty sure that he would jump in here because he would see that is an kind of an opportunity to say, you know, if we stand up for our rights, then we get banned, then we get attacked, then we have like thousands of judges against us. This is his narrative. And I'm sure when a big country, an important country as Germany, would ban a right-wing party which shares the same values as him, that he definitely would use that for his own kind of politics.
And I think, also for context, again, we do have to say that, you know, the legal system in Germany is independent and that they have fined influential AfD people like the state leader in Thuringia, Björn Höcke, twice, for example, for using slogans that are linked to the Nazi era. He's a history teacher by trade, but he used, you know, paramilitary group speech during campaign speeches and later said that he didn't know the reference, and the AfD then dismisses that as politically motivated. But I think it is really important to say, you know, we have a functioning legal system in this country.
Yeah, but there you see also another example of the similarities, right? Because that's something that we've seen Trump do, where he's attacked judges for, you know, ruling against some of his plans to deport people without due process. And then you also see it here. It's kind of actually a populist playbook that you see, like, you know, if you don't like it, then you criticize the decision. But yeah, this is probably not a bad time to say that, look, there is a ban is something that is talked about, but it's very much something that is far, like, is down the road. And even if we did get to that, I think the process, if they initiated the process, it would take years, and there's no guarantee that it would be successful.
Like, and it could be initiated by any of the democratic institutions. So the Bundestag could initiate such a process, but also the federal government.
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European current affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans Wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
I've got a question for Ines at this point, which is I just want to know, like, how often do people ask you about the AfD? What's the kind of level of interest? You're obviously, you know, covering, working for a German broadcaster, you travel all over the States. What's the level of interest in the AfD? What do people know?
That's really a great question because the interest is getting bigger and bigger. I'm just working on a deeper dive about Christian nationalists, and many of them start asking me about the AfD, and this would not have happened a year ago. They want to know what kind of a party is that. Many Christian nationalists have really close ties to Israel. So one of the first questions is, of course, how is the AfD regarding Israel? Are they anti-Semitic or not? They really applaud the fact that the AfD, as of their knowledge, is again against migration, that they are for traditional family values and so on and so forth. So yes, indeed, the AfD is becoming a factor. And also because people like you just mentioned him, J.D. Vance, the vice president, is talking about them. So, you know, that plays into this whole observation that the ties between the Trump administration, the far right, the Christian nationalists, and the AfD, and people kind of sharing their ideology, is getting closer. And not only between the United States and the AfD, but also between the United States, the AfD, and other right-wing, right-nationalist parties in Europe. We also talked with Markus Frohnmayr about that during this interview, and he said, yes, of course, Donald Trump is inspiring for all of us in Europe. So this is not only something between Germany and the United States. This is a bigger movement here.
And I think we should just share with our viewers and listeners some of the impressions of Elon Musk's appearance at the AfD's party convention earlier this year, when Elon Musk and Donald Trump were still friends.
It's You know, it's okay to be proud to be German. This is a very important principle, it's good to be proud of German culture, German values, and not to lose that in some sort of multiculturalism that dilutes everything.
Why that fascination with Germany, Ines? You also went to this one place, and we'll post the link to your report so that people can watch it, to this place where somebody set up a settlement essentially for white people only, and then he started playing the German national anthem.
Yeah, it's a group. They started this movement. It's called Return to the Land, where only white people, with European roots, are allowed to live. And not, you don't only have to be white, you also have to be heterosexual. So that's quite interesting. Why Germany? I mean, because of the history of Germany, you know. For them, Nazi Germany and the way Adolf Hitler and his people kind of took over Germany, it's kind of a role model for them. And some people say that what the Trump administration is doing right now is kind of following this kind of script Hitler administration had. That's what some people say here in the United States. So I think this is the core. So Germany was able, Nazi Germany, Hitler Germany, was able to do what many of these people wanted to do, to get rid of everyone who is not white with European roots.
And tell us a bit more about your impressions from meeting with AfD people in the States when they're there visiting.
Many, as we talked about earlier, in the AfD are critical with the United States. But of course, they're also the members I meet here from the party. They are proud that they are so close to the White House, that they got the support of important US leaders, just as any other German politicians, I have to say, who is here in Washington. They love to get pictures taken, you know, down at the mall with all these massive monuments with Abraham Lincoln and whatnot. So they kind of embrace the importance which comes with a visit to the capital of the United States, but they still do have to be careful, because many in their party are not so fond, not only of the United States itself, but also about the criticism of Donald Trump, of Vladimir Putin. That has been different, but now as Donald Trump is taking clearer stance against Russia, that's a really tricky situation for the AfD leaders.
And you put that question to Markus Frommeyer. Let's just listen to that bit from your interview with him as well.
So I think it's time to find other solutions to make peace. Probably you also need to motivate the Russians to do peace. Might be that it would be helpful to offer them to do, you know, trade again, or probably to do something with Nord Stream. For Germany, it would be a great thing to get, again, energy from Nord Stream.
Nord Stream. Everybody here knows what he's talking about, Matt. Can you just fill us in?
I was just talking about buying Russian oil and gas again in large quantities, which has kind of sustained the German economy for decades. This is where things get really tricky, and this is where it comes back to what I said at the beginning about this inflection point, because the AfD party has gone from 77 MPs, lawmakers in the Bundestag, the German parliament, last year, to 151 now. And previously, the MPs in the former East were dominant, but now, you know, this is a party that's looking west. They've got more MPs, a lot more MPs than now are in the west, the former west, right? And they're not as kind of cozying up to Russia in the same way, right? That they believe in NATO, and so there's a different. And so what you're seeing is that the party is kind of having to shift itself. And so there's things like Frommeyer himself is a good example of this. Frommeyer is very, very close confidant of Alice Weidel, the party leader. He, although he's kind of an interesting character, I think it's worth briefly touching on. Like, so he's very young, he's 34. He's only ever worked in politics, which is normally in the AfD seen as an absolute no-no. There was around like 2019, there was investigations where basically media companies found that the Russian intelligence service had described him as kind of absolutely under our control. And he'd basically expressed very kind of pro-Russian points of view in the past. He's now taken on a much more pro-US point of view. You heard him there saying we should buy Russian gas and that there, but also at the same time saying Trump is an inspiration. That there basically is emblematic of the position that the AfD wants to sell itself in. But the other thing is just, you know, you see with Alice Weidel recently saying that, you know, that Putin needs to de-escalate, needs to show respect to Trump. Things that you would not have heard an AfD leader say in the past, they're now saying. And that is part of A, gets it building closer ties to the US, but also trying to kind of go from a party that is just very popular in the former East, but to become a very mm-hmm. broad church party in Germany. And you cannot win mass big numbers of votes in the West if you continue to come across as pro-Russia or Russia-friendly. And so that's the strategy that you're seeing there as well.
Ines, you were nodding.
Yes, I totally agree. That's really also my sense from here. They just like try to broaden really their acceptance. But I also, I mean, you tell me, because you're living in Germany, I'm living in the States since 5 years. How does it come down that the AfD is so fond of Trump? I mean, Trump has many critics in Germany as well. So how does this play into the bigger picture that the AfD wants to become the biggest party, the strongest party in the in Germany?
What do you think, Nina? I mean, I would say that it's definitely it's an Achilles heel. It's a very sensitive topic, as you mentioned already, Ines, right? That there's a reason that they don't want to kind of over exaggerate the closeness of the relationship, because there are people, Björn Höcke, who we've mentioned, who's very kind of critical of US hegemony in the world. And then you've got people in the East who are just skeptical of it all. I mean, I remember speaking to one senior figure after the Musk kind of love in at the start of the year, and he was just so kind of fed up with it. He was like, it's not good for us as a party, you know? And so you've got to always keep that in mind, that it's a balancing act for the party.
It's definitely a balancing act, and yet I get the feeling that there are lots of people in this country who fall for this idea that there are simple solutions out there. And mm-hmm. if there's one thing that Donald Trump stands for, then it's, let's identify somebody whose fault something is and let's tackle them. I mean, Donald Trump is somebody who calls his opponents enemies, right, and goes after them. And so the complexity of democratic systems is sometimes overwhelming, and lots of people are feeling that here. And the German economy is not in a good state. You know, we've had stagnation for 3 years. Energy prices are really high. We're supporting Ukraine. Lots of people are beginning to say, you know, why don't they look after us more? I mean, of course, you can argue all you want about needing to look after Germans, and you cannot, I mean, especially when it comes to the military perspective, it is very clear that Ukraine is defending a European way of life as well, right? So the support for Ukraine is something that is in Germany's interest, but that's very, very difficult to convey to people. And so lots of people are beginning to say we need strong leaders. And this is, of course, something where they look at Donald Trump and say, look, let's do away with bureaucracy. Let's be faster in our decision making and let's offer simple solutions. Mm-hmm.
And let's put Germany first. I mean, this exactly. is like what they also copy. But what I really found interesting when I talked to Markus Frohnmeier, also off the record, so I can't quote that, but my feeling, and that's also on the record, so I can quote it, was that he really
your feelings are very
tries.
Much on the record, Ines, fortunately.
That's what we love
he
you
really,
for.
He really tried to avoid saying Donald Trump is an inspiration. He said that a couple of times because I kept asking him about it. He really tried to say the MAGA movement, the MAGA movement, the MAGA movement. So they don't want to make Donald Trump too big, too strong. They rather like to refer to, you know, to his party and to his ideology. I found that, if you look into the fine print of this interview, I found that really interesting. And that's something yeah. I definitely will keep an eye on when more AfD people come visit the United States and I will have the chance to talk to them. My feeling is they want to kind of distance them a little bit from Trump himself and rather refer to his movement.
Can I tell you why I think that is, just briefly? I think there are two reasons for that. I think they're playing the long game. The AfD, like everyone, is not thinking, is thinking about what comes after Trump. And they're probably thinking it's good to have contact with people like the Marco Rubio and the J.D. Vances of this world. I don't know enough about US politics to tell you who's going to be the next US president, but I suspect that's part of it. The second thing, which is really interesting, is that I think they genuinely are in awe at the ability of the Republican MAGA movement to reach university college campuses, because that is something that the AfD has a massive deficit in. You look at all the numbers about people who vote for the AfD, and when it comes to things like who are the people that are voting for them, it's the workers that are voting for them. It's very rarely is it highly educated, university educated people that vote for the AfD, and they know that they need to tap into that. Again, part of that whole mission to just get bigger and to get to reach that 30-35% in the polls. So that's another reason why I think they're looking for ideas of how can we tailor our message somehow to start to reach university campuses. And I think that's another reason why Marcus Rohnmeier went to Georgetown, and why they're keeping these connections with young Republican movements.
And also, if I just could jump in here, Nina, and I also think they're fascinated by the fact how Donald Trump and his MAGA movement is or was able to take over the Republican Party, something that the AfD definitely wants as well. And they seem to be just fascinated by that.
And I think we just need to mention one aspect that is very clear where they look up to the MAGA movement, and that is the aspect of big tech and of doing away with all those annoying rules, right? And so people like Elon Musk are definitely benefiting from a system where, you know, jobs are being cut in all those administrative positions where you set yourself rules for how to deal with data protection, all of these things. And that is definitely also something that plays a role, I believe, that you've got this big money essentially supporting this movement.
Zach, I mean, I'm happy to talk about that, because I think it's an area where the AfD is both, they share common goals with, if you like, a kind of Elon Musk, who basically thinks that the European Union is an awful idea because, it creates a counterpoint to his power, regulations, what they don't like. But on the other hand, they are sceptical within the AfD. They're sceptical of big companies that have too much power. They're also sceptical about tech companies using their power to spy on citizens. So there's a kind of tension there. And that's why, you know, there were critics within the AfD regarding this closeness to Elon Musk. But certainly when it comes to the deregulation and getting kind of even potentially reforming the European Union or leaving it, there are definitely there's a lot of common ground there with tech companies and the AfD.
And we could go on for hours. I have one last question for both of you. And I want to know, is there a Project 2029 in the making here in Germany that follows the example of Project 2025?
So the day after the election this year, there was a press conference with Alice Weidel and Tino Chrupalla, the leaders of the AfD. And I remember one thing that stood out to me then was that she was asked about Doge. You know, this basically what you just mentioned there, this Elon Musk department of cutting away all the quote unquote bureaucracy. And she said that she would like to emulate something like that. So I do think they take inspiration. I mean, there's also like a couple of motions that the AfD are putting together that regarding the US that they want to put into the Bundestag next in the coming weeks. And one of those is about suspending foreign aid for 90 days when we come to power, just like Donald Trump did. So they're definitely looking at the Trump administration to see what did they do, what can we copy. But I'm sure Eunice will be able to tell you her thoughts on that as well.
Please do, Eunice.
You are the experts on the AfD, of course. But
Eunice, you asked Marcus Rohnmeier about something quite interesting, because I've often wondered about the immigration aspect, and you put it to him, didn't you?
I did, but coming back to the Project 2025-29, I think they're not there yet, because the Project 2025 here in the United States is prepared since 50 years, 40 years, you know. They have been waiting for someone like Donald Trump who would be willing to just execute what these minds behind the Project 2025 want him to do. And it was so well prepared. They really used these 4 years of Joe Biden to have everything ready. I mean, every single executive order of these hundreds he signed in the first days and weeks were written, they were prepared long before the election even even took place. So I think the AfD is not there yet. I think they don't have the structure, they don't have the brains, to be quite frank. They're very, very smart people here in the US supporting this movement from all different kinds of groups, you know, from the money elites, from religious groups. It's a very kind of broad coalition behind this. But again, they share the AfD and Project 2025. They share the idea, we want to make America, we want to make Germany white again. We want to fight migration and we don't like Muslims. This is really something they have in common. And they definitely, the AfD definitely is copying a lot from that here in the United States. That's my sense.
What a way to end this episode on the far-right AfD's closer ties with Washington, D.C. and with the MAGA movement. And thank you very much, Matt, for being here. And for Ines over there in Washington, you got up very early again for us. So that's very much appreciated. And you, I'm sure, have comments and thoughts on the topic. So make sure that you communicate them with us and we read all of them. Can guarantee you that. Also make sure that you subscribe to our Berlin Briefing newsletter that comes out every Tuesday. And thank you very much for watching and listening, and till next time.